Professor Michael Weiss.
Thanks very much, Antonella. Thanks very much to Rayhan for inviting me to participate in this workshop. And it's a whole set of interesting themes, and I think it's something that needs to be looked at in this way. I'm going to talk about the case of Algeria. As many of you know, it's a country that I work on. I did my PhD thesis in the first book I wrote on the Islamist movement. And with my last book, I returned in the 2010s to look at the case again. But interestingly enough, it's an Islamist movement that really hasn't received much academic attention generally. And therefore, I thought it might be interesting to talk a little bit about the Algerian experience that hasn't really been covered. Now, in one sense, it's rather surprising that the Algerian experience hasn't been covered, because for a period in the mid-1990s, it was recognized as probably the most powerful and influential Islamist movement in the region. As many of you know, in 1990 to 1991, an Islamist political party, the Islamic Salvation Front, or Front Islamique du Salut, usually known by its acronyms FIS, F-I-S, swept the board in local, national, and legislative elections, emerging not just as the clear winner, but with roughly half of all the votes cast in every election it counted. At its height, 5 million people were voting for it in Algeria. As I'm sure you know, when these elections at the national level were precipitably abandoned halfway through and cancelled, and the FIS was banned, armed Islamists led an insurgency against the Algerian regime that lasted much of the 1990s and cost tens of thousands, by some estimates, hundreds of thousands of lives. At one point, it was thought that this insurgency would lead to the establishment, the overthrow of the Algerian regime, and the establishment of an Islamic state on the shores of the Mediterranean. However, this didn't happen, and the insurgency subsequently faded away. Also, not only this, but Islamism, a broader movement and phenomenon, appeared to rapidly recede from Algerian political life thereafter. Now, although the FIS had been banned and dissolved in 1992, there were other political parties, other Islamist political parties that were allowed to continue to operate in contested elections. Yet none of these were really able to continue and have the same sort of support that the FIS had done at its height in the early 1990s, where, as I said, they were sweeping the board with over half of the votes counted, millions of votes. As an indication of this, of these other Islamist political parties, in the wave of elections that took place across the region in the aftermath of the uprisings in the Arab world in 2011 to 2022, Algeria was the only country in North Africa that did not witness a significant surge in support for Islamist parties and candidates. As we've heard, Mezgi, Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, Morocco all saw substantial advances for the Islamists. This completely bypassed Algeria. Indeed, the electoral alliance that the Islamist parties in Algeria put together for the elections in 2012 to take advantage of this was credited receiving a grand total of 6% of the votes cast. The figures for the election are a little bit unreliable, but there's not really any dispute that they did not perform well, and certainly well below what happened across the rest of North Africa. The armed and jihadist groups, elements of Islamism, fared really little better during this period. Not only did the sort of violence that had been associated with the civil conflict of the 1990s fall away rapidly after the turn of the new millennium, but Algerians' presence in international armed and jihadi groups declined steeply. And I think one striking indicator of this was the Algerian presence amongst North Africans leaving to join Islamic State, or Daesh, in Iraq and Syria in the mid-2010s. By 2016, by one estimate, using the International Crisis Group, 6,000 Tunisians had gone to Syria and Iraq to fight with Daesh. The number of Moroccans was about 1,600. The number of Algerians was estimated to be fewer than 100. And this is just two decades after an enormous armed jihadi insurgency in Algeria. These are remarkable figures. So we see both the party political and the armed jihadi tendency had collapsed away. So how do we really explain this precipitous fall off? This is behind the title of my take, Whatever Happened to Algerian Islamism? And what lessons might it provide, if any, for our sort of understanding of Islamism as a phenomenon? Now, on one level, the answer to the question, whatever happened to Algerian Islamism, is sort of quite straightforward, as often the case. The sort of bitter and bloody civil conflict of the 1990s changed public perceptions and thus levels of support for Islamism as a movement and an ideology. However, I think the story is more complex and interesting and nuanced. I think from it, some all sorts of interesting things can come out. And this is what I want, some of the things in the short time I've got here I'd like to talk about. To begin with, I think it's probably worth putting down a couple of caveats about support for Islamism in the 1990s. Support for the feast was already declining at the elections it was contesting in the early 1990s. It had dropped even by the national legislative elections. And similarly, when we look at the armed insurgency, only a fraction of the 3 million voters who voted back the feast in the 1991 legislative elections clearly lent their active support to the armed groups that launched their campaign to resist and reverse the cancellation of the elections and the banning of the feast in 1992. It was certainly true that large numbers of individuals did join these groups, perhaps totaling in the low tens of thousands at their absolute height. Now, that's an awful lot of people, and that's enough to support a substantial insurgency. But it fell well short of what the feast and the armed groups were hoping for. And they had really wanted to reproduce the sort of national insurgency that the FLN had mounted against the French back in the 50s. This was the model that we used. This didn't happen. It didn't mobilize the population. As a result, the campaign of the armed groups in the 1990s never really threatened the overthrow of the state. No major city or urban city was captured, or urban center was captured by the insurgents, and no major defections from the army into the insurgency. Significantly, most of the predictions about the fall of the government in Algiers, which were particularly current in about 1994, were made by Western newspapers and news outlets, alarmed by the rise in violence and by possible parallels with the Iranian Revolution. This became a particular concern in Western newspapers. Nevertheless, the insurrection caused significant bloodshed, costing perhaps as many as 30,000 lives in 1994 alone. So this is a substantial insurrection. Now, the ultimate failure of what became known as the Algerian Jihad was fundamentally attributable to the lack of mass support amongst ordinary Algerians. Its decline from the end of the 1990s is attributable to a complex combination of factors. These include divisions within the armed groups ideologically and geographically, a successful counterinsurgency by the regime helped with through a deal with the IMF, and this culminated in the ceasefire and amnesty for a significant part of the members of the armed groups. These all contributed to it. Now, rehabilitation of the feast, the original Islamist party that had been prevented from victory in 1992, had been a key issue of the negotiations with the armed groups for the ceasefire in 1997, but this ultimately never occurred. The feast was never re-legalized, despite this being on the table. Indeed, the party, the feast that had featured at the center of a political debate throughout the 1990s, progressively faded through the 2000s as the decade progressed. So this was the center, it just faded away. And I think this was sort of, this reality of the feast no longer being at the center of everything was sort of symbolized in December 2011 when the Algerian parliament actually passed a law that more or less explicitly banned the feast from ever being reconstituted. And the symbolism was that the former deputy leader of the feast, Ali Belhaj, he went and mounted a solo protest on his own outside the parliament against it. On his own, sitting there, and he cuts a rather lonely figure. Now, if you know anything about the feast in the 1990s in Algeria, Ali Belhaj was able to attract thousands just to his sermons on Fridays in the El Sunna Mosque in Bab El Oued. And at the feast rallies of hundreds of thousands, he was the star performer. Here is a guy sitting at the parliament saying, please, can you re-legalize my party? So this is sort of this symbolic sort of fall from grace. Now, while the feast remained banned, other Islamist parties were permitted to continue and operate, as I mentioned earlier, but with much limited impact. Some were even co-opted into government, but wielded little power there, awarded minor ministries in governments dominated by parties loyal to the president, who constitutionally dominated the political scene. This co-optation clearly designed to erode the residual support of the FIS served to undermine these parties' credibility as opposition voices, a process reinforced by their progressive implication in government corruption scandals. Accusations of corruption and venality also ensnared members of the armed groups who had accepted the ceasefire and the amnesty deals offered by the state. The fact that large numbers of these former fighters were able to launch successful businesses once they had laid down their weapons was attributed by many Algerians to both financial help from the government as well as investment of money accrued through racketeering during the conflict. In this way, both Islamist politicians and former jihadis came to be widely associated in the public mind with corruption and personal greed. You'll find that often if you raise the subject amongst ordinary Algerians about what they think of Islamists, they say it's not about religion, this is what it's all about. This is what they're interested in. This is a very common thing. You mention Islamists and the fingers would start going, you know, this perception. Yes, this is what they're in. They're not interested in Islam, they're interested in that. Which is a very interesting phenomenon. It's a very widespread thing. But this is interesting, this is in stark contrast to the condemnation of official corruption that had been a major plank of the FIS's electoral success, and indeed is a major plank of a lot of Islamist movements' campaigns. I think you saw it in your three cases very much,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, not all of the Islamist parties who entered into government, not all meant to go, several remained outside and were as harshly critical of the government as the FIS had. However, these parties were no more successful in attracting significant parts of the former support base of the FIS. This suggests that sort of other factors were at work. Indeed, we need to look at changing views towards Islamist movements in Algerian society over this period to understand what was occurring. Now, particularly instructive in this regard was the work of a student who was on the MPhil in Modern Middle Eastern Studies quite a while ago, Leila Nadia Jones, who wrote a fascinating thesis who tracked the views of, in the mid-2000s, in two strongly Islamist FIS-supporting areas and had been involved in the violence. She found their mounting disillusionment with an opposition to the armed Islamist group's campaign against the regime, even amongst former supporters of the FIS. This was not solely the result of unhappiness with the use of violence, but also what was seen as the increasingly exclusively political and personal rather than religious nature of the armed struggle. This is what was unhappiness. Now, it's interesting that the critique of the armed groups by ordinary Algerians was framed in religious terms. And I think Nadia Jones' study was actually prompted by the apparent paradox that she had wanted to explore, that she'd noticed. I think some of the best research is done when people spot a paradox and try and explain it, was that the decline in support for the armed groups and the Islamist political parties in the 2000s was accompanied by a rise in evident religious practice and observance in those areas. This went against the widespread expectation that the upheaval and violence of the 1990s would lead not only to a decline in support for Islamist ideas, but an expansion in secularist ideas and practices. Nadia Jones's respondents accounted for this apparent paradox by explaining that while the FIS and Islamist ideas more generally had prompted large parts of the population to support the application of Islamic values in politics and society, the behaviour of many Islamists in the 1990s had created disillusionment. However, this disillusionment with Islamists did not lead to disillusionment with Islam. In fact, many respondents pointed out that Islamism had effectively reintroduced many Algerians to Islam, leading them to explore religious texts and ideas for themselves. This renewed engagement with Islam, moreover, took a more individualistic turn, focusing on personal piety and behaviour rather than seeking the sort of collective approaches to the transformation of society advocated by most Islamist movements. Again, this is something that occurs elsewhere. Sabah Mahmoud's study in Egypt, for example, looks at this. The piety movement is a very similar phenomenon. Indeed, Nadia Jones argued that this engagement with religious ideas and texts and a more a personalized approach to religion has created, as she wrote, a current climate in which people are far more wary and able to challenge those using dogma to accumulate power, which she regarded, as she described, as a body blow to political Islam. But if people are actually have things to give to speak back against the Islamists. I could talk a little bit more about, how am I doing for time?
5 minutes.
5 minutes, that's fine. So I could talk a little bit more about that, about the depoliticization of religion and the withdrawal of politics from religion, removal from religion from politics has occurred. There's broader things in politics. But with 5 minutes left, I just want to go to some sort of concluding thoughts to try and sort of bring this together. So what can we really conclude from Algeria's experience and from all of its? We see a country that's had an intense experience of Islamism, but has resulted in a society that is now overwhelmingly rejected and left behind the formal party political and jihadi expressions of Islamism, with their ambitions to take control of the levers of the state and thus society. Yet throughout, this religious belief and practice have not diminished, and as seen, has expanded in many ways in place, but in ways that are such much more personalised and depoliticised. In this way, does Algeria represent a case of a state and society that has definitively rejected Islamism as a movement and an ideology? Now, my great friend and academic mentor, the late George Joffe, he was of the view that forms of Islamism are always likely to reappear because of the important and explicit things Islam has to say on subjects such as injustice that were inherently political. In other words, it's going to re-emerge because these issues, depoliticization, can't work. Islam has political things to say. So what can we see more generally from the Algerian experience? This panel was really about the international, transnational implications of it. And I think these are really surprisingly, everybody likes to say what they study has great international implications. I think in my case, I'm not. I don't think it has as many as it is. Algerianism is surprisingly nationally focused, with surprising little outside influence on it. That's not to say there wasn't, and surprisingly corresponding little effects beyond its borders. It's quite a national story. That possibly explains why it hasn't been studied as much. What played out from 2011 in first Egypt and then Syria had remarkable similarities with what had happened in Algeria early on. If you look at the electoral, the feast experience is similar to Egypt, then the civil war, it has remarkable similarities with what happened in the 1990s in Syria. But beyond some advice that the Algerian authorities offered the Syrian government, I don't think there was really clear direct influence. This is partly due to how much more insulated Algeria has been from external trends through its particular history and nature of its economy, but also, it should be said, to a large degree through matter of choice, which sounds a rather strange thing to say. Those of you who know, are familiar with Algeria will know, Algerians are fiercely resistant to the idea that they are following external trends and influences. Hence the nearly universally held view in Algeria that the uprisings of 2011 to 12, elsewhere in the Arab world, were late following a trend that Algeria had experienced itself in 1988. Algeria believes everybody else was late to the party. Very Algerian. This then explains the lack of unrest and upheaval in Algeria in 2011 to 2012. However, I'd like to close with one observation of a phenomenon I have observed in Algeria, and I would be interested to see what other research there is on this and what other people who work on other movements have come across. Ezgi has spoken a lot about post-Islamism, which is a thing and interesting, but I got intrigued by what I call post-Islamists. In other words, what happens to the former Islamist activists once movements fade from prominence? Most of us are aware of the phenomenon, particularly prevalent in the 1970s and 80s, of individuals moving from other ideological trends into Islamism, most prominently from movements of a political left. However, has much research being done on traffic in the opposite direction, of activists leaving Islamist movements for other organisation and ideological trends. During my field work, most recently in Algeria, I was intrigued to counter a number of individuals who I subsequently discovered had previously been Islamist activists but were clearly no longer part of Islamist trends. I particularly remember a long-haired, chain-smoking theatre critic who a mutual friend of ours later told me, oh yeah, back in the day he had his salwa kameez, shouting Allahu Akbar, going down the Dushma Murad, campaigning. This is the same guy. Oh yes, and this happened several times. What happens to these people? Where do they go? I used to ask, where did all the Islamists, where did all the fee supporters go? And ordinary Algerians would say, either all dead, or we're all living with you in London, which I thought was an interesting response. I wasn't able to respond to that. It prompted me to wonder what happened to the rest of the hundreds and thousands of people who attended feast rallies and listened to Ali Belhaj's fiery incendiary surgeons, although sermons always go. Where are they now, and what do they think of the whole period now? I have my own ideas and thoughts, but I'd be very interested to know what other people think about where are all the post-Islamists now. Thank you very much.